This is Richard Perrone, and I'm conducting an oral history interview with Mrs. Frances Hamilton. Today is May 30th, 2003. I'm in Lubbock, Texas, in the Special Collections Library interview room. It is approximately 9:40 a.m. Central Standard Time, and Mrs. Hamilton is in Frisco, Texas. Ma'am, why don't we start with some basic biographical information on yourself? Could you tell us when and where you were born and a little bit about your childhood?
Okay. I was born in Ocala, Florida, mm-hmm. June the 8th, 1933. Mm-hmm. So it was the Depression. Mm-hmm. And my father worked for the Florida Power Corporation his entire life.
Okay.
He attended Clemson and then went to work for them, and so our whole life was around that corporation.
Okay.
I was the middle child of two brothers,
mm-hmm.
and my mother was a newspaper reporter for the Tampa Tribune
mm-hmm.
and the Clearwater Sun.
Okay. What do you have as far as memories of the Depression?
I have none, really.
Really?
I must have been a baby.
Okay.
But I do know that my grandparents, my mother's parents, had a farm,
mm-hmm.
and she had five sisters and one brother, and all of them and their families went back to the farm to live during the Depression.
Mm-hmm.
My mother being the exception, because my father had a job that they really needed
mm-hmm.
with the power company.
Mm-hmm.
So he still had a job, and we could eat and live, but
right.
the rest of them couldn't.
Right.
So I do remember tramps coming to the door and asking for food
huh.
as a child.
Uh-huh.
And, of course, we gave it to them as generously as we could.
Mm-hmm.
But other than that, I really wasn't aware of it.
Okay. Did anyone in your family serve in the military?
Yes, my father's two youngest brothers
mm-hmm.
were, well, actually, all through his family was the military. My father's grandfather was a captain in the Confederate Army.
Okay.
And his two younger brothers served in World War II.
Mm-hmm.
His one brother in the Navy. And the youngest brother, who just died this month, actually,
mm-hmm.
was a Marine in
okay.
Saipan.
Okay, okay. Tell me about growing up in Ocala. What was that like?
Well, we didn't actually stay there very
okay.
long. We moved to several different small towns, but the first one I remember is called Zephyr Hills, Florida.
Mm-hmm.
It was a wonderful town because we could go swimming. We had a lake there, a swimming pool. We could go anywhere in the whole town, and our parents didn't have to worry about us.
Hmm.
We had total freedom as children,
mm-hmm.
which my children didn't have and their children can't have.
Right.
We had a wonderful childhood.
Okay.
It was really nice. And then we moved to Tarpon Springs, which is on the Gulf Coast.
Mm-hmm.
And I still have dear friends there and consider that my home.
Okay.
That's my hometown, really.
Okay.
So that's where we ended up. We just made about four moves.
Okay. What do you remember about your schooling as a youth? Were you good in school? Did you enjoy school?
I did. I enjoyed school very much. And I was pretty good in school. I wasn't really that interested in going on to college, though, but I did well in school, and later on I did go to college and graduate,
okay.
but
okay.
right out of high school I didn't.
What were your favorite subjects?
History and social studies.
Okay. Why? Did they come naturally to you? Or?
They were just interesting.
Okay.
I thought it was fascinating.
Okay.
I was a voracious reader, mm-hmm. as was my mother. I learned the love of books from my mother, and I just was interested in reading. And history took you back to different times and different places and really gave you an understanding of the world,
mm-hmm.
I thought.
Mm-hmm. So you got that from your mother.
Right, I did.
Does that continue today?
Yes, and actually my children, we have two girls, and they are both voracious readers.
That's great.
And my mother has passed away, but I honor her by donating to the Tarpon Springs Library every year.
Okay.
I give a donation because she loves that library.
Right.
And it meant a lot to her in her life.
Right. Were you close to your brothers? You were in the middle between them.
I was very close to my youngest brother.
Uh-huh.
My older brother was 3 years older and, of course, occupied with other things and
right.
left home fairly early. He went into the Navy. Mm-hmm. And but my younger brother, who has also passed away now, I was very close to him.
Okay. What do you remember about World War II?
I remember that we went around our, at that time we lived in Zephyr Hills, mm-hmm. and I remember we went around with pulling a little wagon, collected anything metal, like old pots and pans.
Mm-hmm.
At that time, cigarettes were wrapped in foil,
mm-hmm.
and we collected all these foil leftover cigarette wrappers. And I remember my dad was in charge of, I don't know what you would call it, he was the warden
mm-hmm.
of the area, and we had blackouts
right.
and air raid practices,
mm-hmm.
and they would go around and make sure all in the houses you couldn't see light out of the windows.
Right.
But I remember listening to Roosevelt's speech
mm-hmm.
When Pearl Harbor was attacked.
Wow.
I do remember that.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember my uncle who was in the Marines and my uncle who was in the Navy were lost for a period of about 3 or 4 months, and I remember so much because it was the first time I ever saw my dad cry.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And so that's been, you know, it just stuck in your mind.
Right. They were eventually found, right?
Yes. My uncle, who was on Saipan, was in a coma. He had to have a plate put in his head,
mm-hmm.
and he was in bad shape. But
mm-hmm.
my uncle in the Navy, at the same time, they just couldn't tell you where they were. I mean, it was
mm-hmm.
like a blackout.
Mm-hmm.
But I remember people going to war then were gone for like 3 years.
Right.
And all you could do, you could write, but that's about all.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember people in my town, friends' fathers going away.
Mm-hmm.
I remember we were near Tampa, and that little town was an Army air base,
mm-hmm.
and every Sunday we had servicemen come to eat lunch with us. Our Sunday dinner was like an afternoon dinner,
mm-hmm.
and sometimes there would be two, sometimes there would be one. I remember those very well.
So your mother would just invite them over?
My mother would invite them. Everybody did this in the whole town. Everybody invited them
mm-hmm.
to come, and they were really nice. Nice people.
Mm-hmm.
It was nice to get to know people from all over the country.
Mm-hmm.
And I also remember one other thing. You always stopped for a hitchhiker if they were in uniform.
Right.
And we would go back to South Carolina for vacations, and my dad would always stop, and we would carry, you know, in our little car, I think it was a Ford we had then,
mm-hmm.
with three children, my mother and dad, and a soldier. So it was crowded.
What a neat memory.
And it was safe to do this.
Right.
So it was, I do remember those times.
How much did your experiences as a child during World War II affect your experiences as a spouse in Vietnam?
I think it was totally different. Absolutely different. When Dick first went to war, I thought he would be supported like we supported people in World War II,
right.
but that wasn't the case.
Okay. We'll talk a little bit more in detail about that
okay.
as we get closer to that time. So when you graduated high school, what year was that?
1951.
Okay. And did you go to college then, or did you?
No, I didn't. I didn't go to college until much later.
Okay.
But I worked at an insurance office in my hometown, mm-hmm. and then I went with American Airlines as a flight attendant stewardess then.
Okay. And where were you located?
In San Francisco and Dallas.
Wow, okay. When did you meet your husband?
I met him in 1956 through friends in San Francisco.
Okay, in San Francisco.
Mm-hmm.
All right. And he was in the military by this
right.
time.
Uh-huh.
Right. Okay. Did you have any aversion or any particular thoughts or ideas about dating a serviceman?
Not at all.
Okay.
No.
Okay. How long until you guys got married?
Let's see. About 2 years.
Okay.
We were engaged for one full year.
Okay. And so, and I'm looking at his record here. He was based in Laredo, Texas.
Right.
Is that correct?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And when you got married, you first started in Laredo, is that correct?
No. We were married at Hamilton Air Force Base, right outside of San Francisco.
Okay. And where was he first stationed then when you were first married?
Well, he got out of the service.
Okay.
And we went to Fresno, California.
That's right. He joined the Air National Guard.
Right. And he worked for Procter & Gamble.
Okay. Did you think, or did you try to talk to him about not going back in the service, or were you open to him going back in the service?
At that time, the Berlin Wall was being built,
yes,
and so it was a crisis,
mm-hmm.
and I knew it was a world crisis,
mm-hmm.
and he felt that this was what he had to do,
mm-hmm.
and I didn't really object. Of course, I had nothing to base it on. I didn't know how difficult it would be or how easy it would be,
mm-hmm.
or actually what it would be, but I did feel that he had to follow his heart and do what he thought he had to do.
Mm-hmm.
So I didn't object to it, no.
Okay, so he got back in 1962.
Right.
And where did he go from there?
We went to Tampa.
Okay.
And just
so back home for you, basically.
Right. It was good in a way, but it was just in time for the Cuban crisis.
Yes, ma'am. What do you remember about that?
I remember that a lot of companies took advantage and would advertise their food products for you to take into bomb shelters.
Okay.
And it was kind of a frightening time because Dick was gone constantly. I mean,
mm-hmm.
he was never at home, and I was left with a baby and a little toddler.
Mm-hmm.
And I had to really think about what I would do if we were invaded bombed.
Right.
So it was a little scary.
Was this your first experience of having to deal with these kind of thoughts and ideas?
Yes.
Okay.
That was, and the fact that he was never there was, nerve-wracking too.
Right. What kind of plans did you all have if something might have happened to him?
Well, I thought of getting to my parents who lived in Tarpon Springs, and I thought that would be the best thing for my children and
mm-hmm.
I. And we were alone all the time, so mm-hmm. I really didn't have to think about him.
Mm-hmm.
He was just gone.
Mm-hmm.
And I knew he would be doing his job. But there were people there who said they had gotten guns and things to protect themselves. And I, at that time, I still don't know anything about guns.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't want to get a gun, and I felt the concern of protecting my two little children.
Yes, ma'am.
So, from that standpoint, it was not a good time.
How did you deal with his absence?
Well, I just did what was necessary.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't. I knew he was doing his job, so I didn't worry about him so much. I just took care of my children.
Mm-hmm.
That was my main concern.
How supportive was the military for the wives who were left behind and where the men were off on station?
Well, we were new there, so we were in the 47th Squadron,
mm-hmm.
and the squadron members supported themselves. We each kind of supported each other. Mm-hmm. But as far as the military supporting us, there really wasn't much of anything.
Okay. Did you have any problems, say, receiving paychecks or getting on base when you needed to get on base and going to the PX?
I didn't have any problems getting on base, but we had one month when Dick had come back in the service, there was a mix-up with his rank. And so the first January after we came back into the military, mm-hmm. we got $200 paycheck because they were making, I can't remember the exact details, mm-hmm. but they were, they had overpaid him somehow and took it all out at one time.
Okay.
And if it hadn't been for my parents, we would not have paid the rent that month. So.
Okay.
I remember that very well.
How long were you all, were you in Tampa, actually?
We were there 6 years, because from, let's see, this was 61, 62, 64, they transitioned into the F-4, mm-hmm. and we built a home there, and then he went to Vietnam in 65,
right.
and when he came back, he had another tour in that squadron, so we were able to stay there.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So,
why don't we talk about 1965, when actually he was sent into a war zone?
Okay.
How did you feel about that when you first heard that he would be stationed? I think he was stationed over at Uban
right.
Royal Thai Air Force Base in Thailand.
Right. Well, prior to that, we had just had the election, you know, with
yes,
Goldwater and Johnson. And Johnson, of course, won the election. And when he won that election, I knew that Dick would go to war. And so I was sort of prepared for it.
Mm-hmm.
Even though I had other friends who cried and had tantrums because their husbands were going to war, and Johnson promised, mm-hmm. you know, in his speeches that we would not go to war.
Right.
But so I was somewhat prepared because I had the feeling that he would have to go, but I had nothing to base it on.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know what our experiences would be, and I wasn't prepared for what we went through, because
mm-hmm.
we were told by the military, don't say a word.
Did not say a word.
Do not say where your husband is. Do not say what he is doing. Do not talk to anyone about the war. And they were the very first F-4 squadron in Vietnam.
Yes, ma'am.
And the only other ones were offshore on a ship or the Navy F-4s.
Mm-hmm. Did they tell you why that you couldn't talk about these things?
No. They just sort of threatened us. Don't talk about it.
So you felt like it was more of a threat than it was a request.
Yes. And all the wives in the squadron were terrified to say anything mm-hmm. to the wrong person.
Right.
Because they didn't want harm to come to their husband.
Right.
They did. It was more or less, we don't want the enemy to know where your husband is and what he's doing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, which was, of course, ridiculous.
Right. Did you talk to your parents about it, or were you able to confide in the other wives?
Oh, yes. Yes. The other wives in our squadron, we all, you know,
mm-hmm.
held on to one another.
Mm-hmm.
My husband's backseater's wife was pregnant.
Mm-hmm.
My best friend, whose husband went to, was pregnant. So I felt like I was taking care of them
right.
and my two children, and we all, you know, helped each other.
Did you have an official support group, or was it more informal?
It was very informal
okay.
because we weren't to even admit they were gone.
Oh, really?
So there was no official support at all.
Mm-hmm. What kind of things would you do for each other?
We would go to church. We would pray for each other.
Mm-hmm.
We would go to lunch. We would talk about, you know, whatever problems the children were having, how to help each other. My I had a 2-year-old, and let's see, 65. I had a 5-year-old and a 3-year-old,
mm-hmm.
and the 5-year-old was in parochial school.
Okay.
So that helped us a lot because the church, our priest had been in World War II
mm-hmm.
as a chaplain. So I did have someone I could go to and talk to about mm-hmm. my fears.
And that helped?
That helped a tremendous amount. It really helped a lot.
Okay.
And so I just tried to help other people in turn, you know.
Right.
But one hard part of that is every morning on the radio, they would tell you so many F4s shot down.
Wow, on the national news radio?
On the national news,
okay.
The radio. They wouldn't say if it was a Navy F4 or an Air Force F4.
Mm-hmm.
So you had to wait until like 5 o'clock in the afternoon to see if they would come knock on your door.
Mm.
And that was hard. That was difficult.
I can't imagine.
Very difficult. And finally, my next-door neighbor, who was also in the Air Force, said, I can't stand this any longer, Fran. I'm going to come tell you. Because they would find out every day who was shot down and who wasn't. And they would come tell you.
Mm-hmm. What do you mean?
I mean, my next-door neighbor would come tell me, Fran, so-and-so got shot down today, which was in our squadron. We were all close friends, and we were very good friends. And so you knew. And then we would go over to their house and
mm-hmm.
try to help them.
How would she know the information before everyone else?
It was a he.
I'm sorry.
When he came home from work, from being at MacDill Air Force Base, he would come over and tell me as quickly as he could.
That makes sense.
Because nobody was supposed to talk about it. No
right.
one was supposed to say a word. Nothing.
Mm.
And that was hard, I think, probably one of the hardest parts of that,
mm-hmm.
the secrecy. You were so afraid that you would say something wrong and hurt your husband.
Were you ever able to voice your complaints about this to the military?
I never did. I mean, after it was over, we were all so grateful.
Right.
The ones who lived. I mean, we lost a lot of men in our squadron. We never did. No one ever asked us for our opinion. And
right.
we never gave it.
Right.
So.
What would you all do when you found out that someone in your squadron had been shot down?
We would go to their house. It meant two men.
Right.
It meant two people.
Mm-hmm.
We would go to their house and try to help them take care of their children, bring food, you know,
mm-hmm.
try to help them that way.
Mm-hmm.
And I actually do know of, there was only one person I know of who wouldn't admit it or talk about it, and her husband was taken prisoner. And she would not even admit it. She
really?
Wouldn't say. She was so scared
mm-hmm.
to do something wrong, she wouldn't say a word. But everybody else, we had, like, squadron. We would play bridge together. We would go to lunch together.
Mm-hmm.
And those whose husbands were shot down and who were either missing or prisoners of war, they would talk about it there.
Mm-hmm.
But nowhere else.
What would they say?
How worried they were, how afraid they were. One of our friends was Dick Kern,
mm-hmm.
who they marched him through a village, and he was on the cover of, like, Newsweek, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And it showed him all bandaged and obviously hurt very badly. And the Air Force was having a hard time identifying him.
Mm-hmm.
And his wife said, I know it's him because I can see his hand.
Mm-hmm.
I know his hand, and that's Dick, and it was him.
Mm. But is that how she found out it was him?
They told her he was shot down. They didn't know anything else.
Wow. And then the cover of Newsweek.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Tell me how you dealt with your children, and what did you tell them about their father being off at war?
Well, I told them their daddy had gone to work.
Mm-hmm.
They knew that all their friends' fathers were gone, too.
Yes, ma'am.
So they knew. I didn't tell them he had gone to war. I didn't tell them anything about the war. They were 5 and 3, so
right.
I didn't tell him anything about that.
Okay.
But one time I would go to my parents' house often, you know, and on one weekend my five-year-old said to my dad, Papa, do you have a job? And he said, well, yes, certainly I do. And she said, well, where is your flight suit? Because she thought all dads, you know, flew airplanes.
Right, right. So they were aware that their father was a pilot.
Yes,
okay.
Very much.
Okay.
And most of their friends were, too. So it was just a natural thing for them to be gone. Before the war, they were gone a lot anyway. So
right.
It wasn't anything different for them,
right.
Fortunately. For me, it was different, but
of course,
not for them.
Of course. Did the military have any kind of formal organization or any kind of support at all or communication with the wives while the husbands were gone?
No, no. Neither time my husband went to Vietnam, they had nothing for us.
Why do you think that is?
I don't know. I think they were struggling with just handling the war.
Mm-hmm.
I think that they just didn't think of it.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't realize the need of it.
And has that changed today, do you know? Or did it change over the years?
I really don't know. No, it didn't change over the years. Individual people in the military were very helpful, and they would help you. But the official Air Force wasn't very helpful
mm-hmm.
at all.
Okay.
One thing they did do was they gave the missing men's wives their paychecks. Even though they felt they were dead,
mm-hmm.
they still gave them the income until they found out for sure.
Okay.
Which I thought was a good thing.
Right.
I think they did try to help, but it was a big job.
Yes.
How do you help someone you're not supposed to talk about?
Exactly.
You know, anything.
Exactly. You said individuals helped you. How would these individuals help you?
Well, they would just, we would be friends. We would do things together. We would tell each other it was going to be okay. And when we would get letters, we would share the letters from Vietnam with each other. And my husband wasn't even able to tell me who was shot down. So this secrecy was a difficult, hard thing, part of it.
Did that go on for both tours when he was gone? Or was that just the first one?
It was mostly the first one.
Mm-hmm.
But on the second one, we then, from MacDill, we then went to Libya, and we were there when Gaddafi took over the country.
Right.
From there, Dick went back to Vietnam, and I went back to Tampa and put my children back in the parochial school that they knew, but we weren't part of the squadron, so we were just on our own, really.
Okay.
I had my parents and some friends who had stayed there, but we had no official help or anything.
How different was it then, being more on your own versus part of the squadron?
It wasn't so bad because we weren't losing planes every day in the second time Dick went.
Right.
We didn't lose nearly as many people.
This is in 1970.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So it wasn't so terrifying.
Right.
In 1965, it was hard because when I went to bed every night, I didn't know if my husband really would be dead or alive the next day.
Mm-hmm.
And we had a brand new house. I didn't have a college education. That's when it came home to me. I would have to support those children if something happened to him, because the Air Force at that time gave us $10,000 worth of insurance, and we had a private insurance that we paid for on our own.
Mm-hmm.
But I think we had $70,000 worth of insurance.
Wow.
But I could have paid for my house, gone to school, and gotten a job and educated my children, you know, taking care of my children.
Yes, ma'am.
But I had to be cognizant of that all the time.
Right.
It was a big responsibility.
Did the otherwise, were they as prepared as you were or cognizant of that responsibility?
Yes, I think so. Okay. I think we all were because it, you know, it was on our shoulders.
Mm-hmm.
And some had extra insurance and some didn't. And if they didn't, we didn't discuss it because you didn't want to add to their burden.
Right.
And make them more fearful.
Right.
So it was, but it was always there. And that, first, you worried about your husband, and then you worried about what you would do if something happened to him.
Mm-hmm. Did you ever get used to that?
No.
Okay.
Never. But certain things did change. As the men were shot down in our squadron, the wives were left. If they owned a house, they couldn't sell the house. If they had a car, they couldn't sell the car because of the Florida laws. And my next-door neighbor, who was also in the Air Force, deeded his house to his wife before he went
mm-hmm.
and did other things to make preparations because we were sort of the guinea pigs,
mm-hmm.
and a lot of women in our squadron were left in really bad positions.
Mm-hmm.
They were stuck. If their parents were across the country, they couldn't pick up and go there because they had to pay the mortgage, keep the house, keep the car. You know, they couldn't really do anything. They were stuck.
What was that law? Tell me what the Florida law was.
Was that if you owned a car or house, it had to be in both
mm-hmm.
Names. As a wife, you couldn't have a car in just your name, so you couldn't sell the car if your husband didn't sign the paper, and if he was missing or a POW, he couldn't sign.
Right.
So he couldn't sign the deed for the house. He couldn't. You were, even if you had a power of attorney, which most all of us had, it wasn't good enough.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we learned from that.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody did.
Right.
And that, I think they even changed the law in Florida, but it just made things more difficult for
right.
those who really needed it.
Right. What kind of preparations did you and your husband make specifically before? You mentioned the extra insurance. What else did you do? Or did you do anything?
Well, we talked about taking care of the house, mowing the lawn. I had to do all of that.
Right.
You know,
right.
We had to make sure it could be done.
Mm-hmm.
We had a child who was ill, so we used an outside doctor, not a base doctor.
Mm-hmm.
And we had to just make sure that we had enough money every month to cover that.
Right.
And it was a little bit difficult from that standpoint because we didn't know how much money he would be spending and how much money. We knew how much money it would take to run the house and
mm-hmm.
the children, the school, and all that.
Mm-hmm.
So we had to just be very careful.
Right.
And it, while that wasn't a burden, it was just another worry.
Mm-hmm.
So, I don't know if I'm making sense.
Absolutely. Yes, ma'am. Of course you are. Was the fact that you now had to run the entire household yourself, mow the lawn, do all
mm-hmm.
of those things, was that empowering to you, or was it, how did you feel about that?
That's an interesting question, because actually, as my husband was gone so much, I was able to do that. I
mm-hmm.
knew every time he would be gone like 30, 90 days,
mm-hmm.
I would do that. I would mow the lawn. I would take care of the yard. I would do all the stuff he did when he was home,
mm-hmm.
plus what I did. But then when he came home, and we would think about putting drapes in the window, and he would say, well, I like brown. And I would think, well, you know, I don't like brown, and why are you even voicing your opinion? I'm the one who does all of this.
Right.
You don't have any say.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, I can really see how that caused problems for across the board for
mm-hmm.
military families.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's hard to switch roles. Suddenly, you're a part of a pair that's working together, and then you're alone. Then mm-hmm. you come back, you're a pair. Then you're alone, and it goes back and forth, and you switch roles, and that's hard. That's very hard.
I can imagine. How hard was it emotionally to kind of check back in again? And, okay, now the person is right there with you, you know, now, and they'll be gone again and for 90 days. And,
it was hard because I resisted it. It was like, you don't have any say about this. And that's not, you know, that wasn't good.
Right.
It wasn't cooperating, mm-hmm. but it was difficult. I think it was probably more difficult for the wives than the husbands.
Mm-hmm.
So I wouldn't say that was, you know, a big part of it, but it just was a part of it.
Was that typical, your experience, would you say?
Yes, I think so, yes.
Okay. Tell me about communication with your husband when he was away, and especially when he was in Thailand, and again in 1970 when he was actually stationed at Phuket.
Well,
how much did you write, telephone calls, anything like that?
I wrote him every day. He couldn't call and I couldn't call. There were no phone calls, but
okay.
It took about... Our letters would pass, and it would be like a week late.
Mm-hmm.
So, since he couldn't tell me anything that was really going on, mm-hmm. it was just personal things.
Right.
What
would you say to him in your letters? What would you write about?
Well, I'd write about what the children were doing and, you know, the changes in them, their, you know, how they were making strides and... just about their lives and our lives and our friends, the wives, you know, of mm-hmm. people in the squadron who were left behind, what we did, mm-hmm. where we went to lunch, when we played bridge,
mm-hmm.
you know, things like that.
Okay. And what would he be writing to you? What would he say in his letters?
Well, he wouldn't tell me anything about who was shot down and who did what or any of the missions.
Mm-hmm.
He and our good friend, our best friends at that time, and they would go around taking pictures of all these things in this little small Thai village,
mm-hmm.
Ubon. And he would send me the pictures and tell me about the food they were eating in this Indian restaurant, and he would tell me all good things.
Right.
About his backseat or how he was doing good, and mm-hmm. he wouldn't tell me anything bad or anything worrisome.
Did you know that he wasn't telling you anything bad or worrisome?
One of our backseaters came back home because they were shot down, and he broke his back,
mm-hmm.
and he had to come back to recuperate at MacDill, and then he told me what was going on, how much problems they were having and
mm-hmm.
all of that, and then I knew how really bad it was.
Mm-hmm.
That was devastating to me to hear, you know.
Do you remember what he told you?
He told me about the operations officer and the squadron commander and the things they were doing. And it was bad. So, yeah, I do remember a lot of what he told me. Yeah.
Can you elaborate, or would you rather not?
Oh, I don't mind. I don't know. They're both dead now, so I guess it doesn't matter.
Okay.
But the squadron commander had been a Thunderbird, and he was one of these hot shots. But he was not a good commander. He was not good to his men, and he often went to Saigon to party and left the men to, you know, do their own thing. And the men sort of formed their own flights, who would fly together, who wouldn't fly together, and they did their own thing. And those, like my husband and some of the others who were really good pilots, would all fly together, and they would, you know, they were protecting each other
mm-hmm.
as much as possible. They weren't insubordinate, but
mm-hmm.
they said, this is the way we want to do it,
mm-hmm.
and when possible, they would go together with good pilots that they knew to protect each other. It wasn't always possible, but when it was, that's what they did.
Okay.
And I just felt sure that they would take care of themselves. I will tell you, though, when one good friend got killed, it really scared me because he was such a nice guy, such a funny guy, such a wonderful human being. And that's when it hit me. I thought, if he can get killed, Dick can get killed. Mm-hmm. And it really scared me.
When was this?
This was in October of 1965.
Okay. How did you deal with that?
Prayed a lot.
Mm-hmm.
I prayed a lot, but it made it more difficult.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was just like some people you just think are charmed and nothing can happen to them.
Yes, ma'am.
Well, he was such a funny guy that you just never thought about him dying.
Mm-hmm.
And when he did, it was really hard.
Mm-hmm.
And as a matter of fact, his wife was driving down the street, and one of our other wives in our squadron was out watering her lawn, and she stopped, and she said, the wife watering the lawn said, "Oh, I heard someone got shot down today." And she said, "Yes, it was my husband."
Oh, boy.
And that was hard.
Mm-hmm. She didn't know at the time that he was dead or alive.
See, that was part of nobody knew. No, nobody knew, but the way they said it, pretty much he was dead, but they kept him missing.
Mm-hmm.
And his backseater's wife had two little children, a brand new baby, and they were very young, and so everybody just tried to take care of them.
Mm-hmm.
And it was hard.
How long would it take for them to actually find out the status of someone who was shot down?
Years later.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
if you were notified that, okay, Dick had been shot down, it could be
years.
Oh, boy.
As a matter of fact, I think, I don't know if I should say names or not, but this particular person, I think it was like 20 years later, they brought his remains home. And he was missing that whole time.
Hmm. I guess after a while,
you
can safely guess that.
After the war is over and, you know, they're not found.
Right.
You pretty much know. And also the men who saw it happen knew.
Yes.
And they came home and told his wife. But the Air Force, the official policy was that he was still missing.
Right.
Which was good because it gave her a paycheck. And
That's
she
right.
had three little children to raise.
That's right.
So
how much of this and your fears and the problems that you were encountering, how much did you communicate that to him in your letters? You said he was not telling you of his dangers. Were you telling him of your dangers?
No. He didn't tell me of his dangers. He would just tell me how good they were doing.
Right.
I didn't give him any.
Why not?
I didn't want to worry him. I didn't want him to think about anything but that we were all right and we were going to be all right. I did not want him to take that into battle or to think. I wanted him to concentrate on his job and get home.
Mm-hmm. It's almost the same thing that he was doing with you.
Yes. It's you protect each other.
Mm-hmm.
You love each other and you protect each other. And that's
mm-hmm.
what we did. And he pretty much knew I would be all right. So,
did you ever find yourself really wanting to know what was going on behind the scenes? Or were you fine with not knowing?
No, I wanted to know. It would have been easier to cope had I known.
Mm-hmm.
But only military people would talk about it.
Right.
Some of the men and all the wives in our group would talk about it.
Mm-hmm.
But some of my other neighbors were other Air Force men, and they would talk about it to you, but not to, not for the public.
Right, right. What kind of things did you send them? You send them letters. Did you send them care packages or anything like that?
I'm trying to remember.
Were you able to?
I sent him, well, this is kind of sad, but my neighbor, one of my neighbors, they were in our squadron too, and he cut his foot mowing his lawn, and he couldn't go with the rest of the men. So he had to go, he had to wait till he was well and go, and I sent Dick some candy with him, because we couldn't send packages, really, back and forth. And he went to survival camp in the Philippines on the way, and then when he got there, the candy was full of ants.
Oh, no.
The sad thing is he was killed in his very first flight out of there.
Oh, no.
So it was really, it was hard, you know. It was not an easy time for us, any of us, the men included.
How did your feelings about the country, the United States, evolve and change going through this very difficult time? Or did they change at all?
I love my country, but we... that's a really hard question. At the time, at some functions, I had one woman say to me, she was a lawyer's wife, and she said to me, "Oh, your husband's in the Air Force." And I said, "Yes, he's away." And she said, "Oh, well, he volunteered." Because, you know, when you say they're away, you know immediately where they are. "Oh, well, he volunteered for this." And I just turned around and walked away. And I thought, what a inhuman, strange attitude. Because it had been so different in World War II. The whole country was for, you know, for all the men in the military.
Yes, ma'am.
And it was just a, you know, certain people would not be receptive, and so you just shrugged it off.
So it did not affect your faith in our government or what we were doing. We'll get to larger questions a little bit later, but just during the specific times when he was gone, did your opinion change, your support of the government of the country change at all or evolve in any way?
Well, I knew that things were not going well in the war, and I didn't believe that it was being run right. I didn't believe it was being, I didn't believe they were out to win. And it made me mad at the government, but that didn't affect how I felt about my country.
Okay.
You know, it did. It made me realize that it makes a big difference who's running the government and who isn't. And that you'd better vote because your vote counts.
Yes, ma'am.
And it does matter. And then I have never, ever missed an election, ever, local or national since then. But during the time he was gone then, we had the riots in Watts.
Yes, ma'am.
We had Johnson, President Johnson, telling them they had a right to riot. I just didn't understand that. I was just floored. We had riots in Tampa, and I just didn't understand what they were doing at a time when we were at war, having all these local riots. And I didn't know how far they would go, if everything would disrupt, you know, if our whole country would turn into riots or what would actually happen.
Right.
So it was kind of unnerving because people were hurt in Tampa from the riots. Not as bad as Watts, but it wasn't pleasant or pretty.
Right.
And so it just added another fear to my world because I didn't know how it would end up.
Right. Ma'am, why don't we take a break just for a moment?
Sure.
Okay, let me ask you a couple questions about the differences in the two time periods. You know, Dick went over in 65, and then he goes over in 1970. What
right.
was different in your mind, thinking back today? What was the main difference between those two time periods for you here at home?
It was entirely different. I knew what Dick had been through.
Mm-hmm.
I knew that he was a highly skilled pilot, and even though I realized after each person was shot down in 65 in the squadron,
mm-hmm.
the men would come back, and I learned this after. They would come back, and they would talk to each other, and they would say, well, so-and-so did this. I'll never do that, so I'll live
okay.
through it.
Okay.
I'll not make that mistake. He made a mistake. And it wasn't condemning them,
right?
But it was trying to learn from them
mm-hmm.
and just telling yourself you wouldn't make that mistake.
Mm-hmm.
So when he went back the second time, I felt he'd been through really a bad time, and he would know what he was doing.
Mm-hmm.
It would be much easier. He would know what he was facing, and it was a lot different and a lot easier for
right.
him.
Right.
So those were entirely different times, but
mm-hmm.
already, you know, Jane Fonda was really hot in the press
mm-hmm.
and all of that,
mm-hmm.
which it made me really angry.
Well, let's talk about that. Tell me, how did you feel about that?
I felt really angry about that. I felt very bad about that. I happen to have known Henry Fonda's last wife very
mm-hmm.
well,
mm-hmm.
and I knew he wasn't a communist or communist-leaning or anything like that. And for this woman to have been brought up and all of this wealth and money, and then to do the things she did to our POWs. At that time, I went right to work trying to help our POWs' children in selling the bracelets
mm-hmm.
and doing things to help them. And here was this woman over there turning them in, causing them to be punished and beaten.
Mm-hmm.
And to this day, I am not an angry person, but I am angry about that.
Okay.
I feel, you know, for anyone to hurt our friends who were living such hellish lives in those prisoner of war camps, it was wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Very wrong.
Mm-hmm. What did you think about the anti-war movement?
I thought they were stupid and dumb. I thought they were uninformed.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought that there's a time and place for it,
mm-hmm.
but it's not when you're at war.
Mm-hmm.
It's before or after. But also at that time, a lot of people were running to Canada. They were cowards.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess it was being married to someone who loved his country and felt duty-bound to serve his country, however they asked of him. I just felt like I was way over, the pendulum had swung so far over that I couldn't really see what they were. I couldn't understand them.
Right. Did you ever witness one of the demonstrations firsthand?
No, but I had friends who came back, pilots who came back, and the service sent them on to colleges,
mm-hmm.
One, University of Colorado, and they spit on him,
hmm.
and that made me furious.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, as I just thought, I knew we were right, and I didn't care what anybody else thought, frankly.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But it made me angry to see them do the things they did. I think there's a way to demonstrate, and there's a way not to demonstrate.
Right. Can you compare it to what you witnessed recently with the Iraqi war? Were these demonstrations better conducted in your view?
No. I think it's the same old rhetoric, the same old thing.
Mm-hmm.
And quite frankly, I am very thankful that George Bush is our president now, because mm-hmm. I think our country has a terrible, terrible problem with these terrorists. And unless we can do something about the problems in the Middle East, we're going to have more September 11th.
Mm-hmm.
And it terrifies me for my children and my grandchildren. And I, you know, I want to get this settled. It's very complicated. It's going to take a long time, but that doesn't mean we shouldn't try to do it.
Mm-hmm.
And I just think a lot of these people have a set agenda. A lot of them are socialists, want to be communists.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of them just are Democrats who only believe in Democrats. And I think it's a shame that they can't see the big picture.
Mm-hmm. Tell me what you thought of the media coverage of the Vietnam War and what you saw on TV day to day, especially during those times when Dick was gone.
Well, it was scary. I saw, of course, every night, if you turned on the evening news, you saw people, Americans being killed or Americans being paraded through the streets as POWs, which I knew a lot of those POWs.
Mm-hmm.
And I was very fearful for what would happen to them.
Mm-hmm.
And I think now Walter Cronkite tells us, you know, that he's very anti-war and very liberal, and I think now you say that
mm-hmm.
instead of, you know, giving us the liberal slant and trying to pretend that it was an honest view,
mm-hmm.
I thought it was wrong. Now that I look back, I think it's even worse.
So there was, you don't think there was a balanced reporting of the war?
No,
no. Okay.
Not at all.
What would you say was the overall morale of America in 1965 to 70?
The overall morale.
Because you were in a community where you were with the wives and a kind of a tighter community, but just watching TV, looking at the progress of the war, or the lack thereof, how would you judge the morale of the country?
I think it was pretty low. I think opinions were scattered. We didn't have the information about how the war was run at that time.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't have a lot of information, and I think the morale was very low, especially during the time of the riots.
Mm-hmm.
There was a lot of unhappiness and disruption and complaints, and then there were the people who felt it was the right thing to do,
mm-hmm.
or if, since we'd been sent to do it the right way. There were a lot of people like me who weren't in, they talked among themselves.
Mm-hmm.
My parents, for instance, felt since we had been sent to war, then do it correctly. But
mm-hmm.
they didn't necessarily believe that the military was right,
mm-hmm.
but they felt that since we'd been committed, then back the military up. The
mm-hmm.
time to look into all this would be after it's over.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Mm-hmm.
And it was very complicated. I did try to follow as much as I could about the Paris peace talks and what the French had done and how we led up to this through
right.
Eisenhower and Kennedy and, you know, then Johnson. But from what you got out of the newspaper, it wasn't enough to
mm-hmm.
really know.
How much did the anti-war movement, the riots, the discontent that you've described here in America, how much did that affect you personally as the spouse of a veteran and a spouse of someone who's on active duty actually participating in the conflict?
It worried me because I didn't want harm to come to my children.
Mm-hmm.
I felt very protective. Actually, my children were the main things. I knew my husband could take care of himself,
mm-hmm.
but I was concerned for the future of our country. With the riots, I didn't know how far they would go. I was concerned about, you know, anarchy in our country. It was, those were scary times.
Right. You saw that as a real possibility.
Right. Yes, I did.
Okay. Tell me what your impressions were of the presidents who had us involved in Vietnam, starting with Eisenhower.
I don't think Eisenhower's intent was to go to war. But this policy just seemed to evolve. I think he thought he could send people over there to help, but they wouldn't be involved in the war. And I think that's what Kennedy thought, too. I think when he sent more military men over there, he had no intention of going to war. And I think that it just happened. I mean, it just escalated. I think McNamara was wrong, and I think he was behind a lot of this. His policy was wrong. And perhaps if Kennedy had lived, it would have been a different outcome. But I feel very badly. I think it was a wrong war. I don't think we should have gone to war. But I don't think that the dissidents were right. I don't think they had, that they really, this was why they were protesting.
Right.
I think they were protesting for other reasons, unfortunately.
Did you feel at the time it was the wrong war?
No, I was so consumed with my husband being at war that I really didn't think about the rest of it. All I wanted was him to get home.
Okay. Was that the same in 1970?
Yes. In 1970, I knew he had to go. Well, I will tell you, we had a lot of arguments about it because I wanted him to get out of the military and go to the airlines, and he wouldn't do it. Flying fighters was his life, and I must say that, you know, I was not as supportive and receptive because of what we'd been through, not knowing, of course, that the second time would be different, but I still felt that the military had not supported us at all, really, and I wanted to get out, and he didn't.
Right.
So that's pretty much it.
But he did shortly thereafter, didn't he?
Pardon?
He did shortly thereafter get out.
No, he was in the service for 33 years.
Oh, that's right. That's right.
He got out prior and came back in 61, right at 62.
Right.
So
my note stopped at November 1970. So that's obviously not his end of his career.
No, no.
Right, right. What was your impression of Vietnam, the country? Did you form an impression of it?
You know, I didn't really know much about it. You're talking about the time when he went to war.
Yes, ma'am.
I didn't really know much about it. And even now, I will not support items made in Vietnam.
Really? Why not?
Because I think that it's a communist country, and we believe in democracy. And even though there's no war, they're still communists.
Right.
And I don't want to support them.
Do you agree with the United States kind of opening back up to Vietnam starting in 1995 and continuing through today?
No.
Okay.
But I could be wrong. I just personally... I wouldn't do it, but I've been wrong before.
Okay. Did you have any opinion at the time, 65 to 70, of the capabilities of South Vietnam defending itself against North Vietnam without the help of the United States?
I didn't think that they could do it. I didn't think they could do it. But after the assassination of the South Vietnamese president,
yes, ma'am,
I had very little hope that anything could be salvaged in that country because I knew something was wrong with the people running the war. I knew that this isn't right, and I knew that we had a hand in that somehow, and it was just not a good feeling.
Right. What did you think of Richard Nixon as president, him coming in saying, okay, I have a plan to end the war, and then and what happened with his administration, and eventually actually getting out of Vietnam?
Well, I think when he was elected, and we have to go back, when he was elected, I thought he would be a good president, and I think that he did do many things, like in China, things that were good. But I was disappointed in the way we left Vietnam. I thought it was wrong. I thought we could have done it a lot differently. I thought that Kissinger was just getting too involved in Paris. They weren't making any headway. It was just futile. And I was very disappointed in the way things turned out. It was sad, really.
Do you think the United States achieved, quote-unquote, peace with honor?
No. No.
Why not?
I think we ran. I think we ran. We left the people in the South to fend for themselves, and I think that we just got out because of the TV coverage, the American people said the price was too high. We weren't fighting the war the right way. We weren't fighting to win, and therefore we couldn't win. So I think we just turned tail and ran.
Do you remember how you felt in April 1975 when Saigon and South Vietnam fell?
I felt very sad. I felt very sad, and I felt very scared for the POWs because I didn't know if they would kill them, you know, then or not. And I just felt very sad and almost heartbroken at the way it happened, and the people who were hurt when it happened, and the people in the South who befriended us and who were left on their own. I thought it was terrible.
When your husband came back in 1970 and was done with Vietnam for the, you know, for the remainder of his career, and then moving through the 70s and the fall of South Vietnam in 1975, how much did you all talk to other people about Vietnam and the Vietnam experience that he had had and what you guys had been through?
Not much. We talked only with those squadron members who had been in that squadron and who had experienced it, and other people, we didn't talk very much about it at all. In fact, we didn't talk about it. But as the POWs came home, we talked about it to them. And as a matter of fact, I gave one his very first meal in somebody's home.
Really?
And he had been about, I think, 6.5 years a prisoner. And he kept, he would just every once in a while go open the refrigerator and look in, at the food in my refrigerator and say, it is so wonderful to be home and see this food. But you just didn't talk to other people about it because, first of all, they didn't understand our experience. And second of all, you just, you didn't want to, you know, go there.
Do you feel like there was a stigma, a negative stigma attached?
I think they tried to, but I felt a lot of pride in the way my husband fulfilled his duty and the way our friends fulfill their duties and the way they, you know, I know that they were honorable men, and I know that they were the cream of the crop of our country, and I know how they felt about doing the right thing, and I know they weren't warmongers or, you know, people bloodthirsty. In fact, nobody hates war more than the military people because they have to fight it.
Right.
And if you know what war is, it's not pleasant. So
you've mentioned some things about POWs. How much contact did you have with them when they came back?
A lot. Those in our squadron we kept in touch with, you know, let's see. What I can mention, Dick Kern, he I talked to him just 3 months before he died. He called us right when he got back, he called us periodically. We would just talk to him, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And we all drew together in that 47th Squadron. We all just bonded together as friends. And we can see one of them today, and it's just like 40 years ago,
mm-hmm.
you know.
Mm-hmm.
It's I don't know how to explain that kind of a bonding. But I saw a lot of them. As a matter of fact, I ran a POW office in San Bernardino, California, in 73, when the war ended.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of them came to use our office for their office. And so I got to know quite a few others that I hadn't known,
mm-hmm.
you know, before that were shut down. And I know some of them were going through difficult, hard times. And it was an adjustment for all of them. It was difficult for them.
What did you do at the POW office?
We sold POW bracelets to make money for the sons and daughters of those killed so they could have college educations.
Mm-hmm.
And I raised $40,000, which was a lot of money. I was very proud of that,
mm-hmm.
to help the scholarship fund.
Mm-hmm. And you were able to meet with the families? And...
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Okay. What was the reaction to what you were doing?
They were grateful and happy. I mean, it was just part of the continuation of the supporting each other that we did in 65. It was just mm-hmm. a continuation of that, that you knew if you were military, you helped other military.
Right.
No question.
Was this particular to the 47th, or was this just
No, this was the whole military, not
okay.
just the 47th.
Okay. What do you think was the most significant thing that you learned personally by going through those times?
I learned that no matter how hard it is, you persevere. That you just suck your breath in and you go forward and you do what you have to do, no matter how scared you are,
mm-hmm.
no matter how worried you are, you can do it.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I learned.
Okay. Is there anything that you would change about your experience now, looking back?
Now I might demand more from the military,
mm-hmm.
but at that time I demanded nothing. I just kept my mouth shut.
Mm-hmm.
But I might demand more support than we got.
Right. Do you think you would have gotten it?
That's a good question. I don't know.
Okay.
I think we got a lot of support from each other, and we got as much support as was available for us. But other than that, I'm not sure about that question, because a lot of this came from Washington,
mm-hmm.
and you know how that is.
Mm-hmm.
You're far away, and you're not a part of it, so I don't know.
Do you harbor any resentment toward the military today?
No. No, I don't.
Okay. How do you think the Vietnam War has most affected your life after all the things that you went through with it?
Wow. That's really a good question. That's a deep question.
Take your time.
I think that it actually affected the psyche of our country, because it was just right in your face that we lost that war and all those really good men died. And I really feel they should not have died.
Mm-hmm.
That we didn't really gain much for us or for the world by that war.
Okay. How about you personally?
I learned that I'm strong,
mm-hmm.
that I'm a strong person. And even though something hurts you badly, you just keep going.
Mm-hmm.
That's the only, you never quit and you never give up. That's what I learned. I was very young then. I was 33 years old.
Mm-hmm.
And I do think that it, I've had some really sad things happen since then, and I learned you just persevere. You go on.
Mm-hmm.
You don't let it break you.
Do you think the United States learned any lessons from the war?
No, because they're still debating it. You know, they're still debating it, and they're still the same old rhetoric. It's like I'm disappointed because in the war in Iraq, people either don't want to or can't see how complicated the question is and how we must do something because we are the only superpower. I don't like that word, but we're the strongest country in the world, and if we don't do anything, we're going to be in real trouble for our future.
Mm-hmm.
And it's disappointing, although I know a lot of people have their own political axe to grind and wouldn't, you know, not want to look at it a different way.
Mm-hmm.
It's disappointing to me personally that people don't really go study it, that you don't read everything you can find, that you don't go to the library, that you don't go to classes and you find out about Muslims and the Quran and mm-hmm. what they believe and how it might affect us
mm-hmm.
and the few fanatics that can, you know, do a lot of destruction. And I personally have gone back to 1945 and studied the history of Israel being
mm-hmm.
Established again, just to try to understand the roots of all of this.
Right.
And to understand really what is going on and what is driving these people. And I think that from that I understand it's despair. And we must do something to help them, to give them a future, to stop this.
Is that akin to the United States stepping in South Vietnam, trying to give them a future, to help them?
I think our intentions were good, but I think the way we went about it was wrong.
Mm-hmm.
I think the people who ran the war were wrong. And I lay a lot of that at McNamara's feet.
Mm-hmm.
I just think we didn't go in there to win, because we had one young man in our squadron who bombed a boat on a river, and it blew up because
mm-hmm.
it was an ammunition boat,
mm-hmm.
and they were thinking of prosecuting him for blowing up this boat on the river.
Mm-hmm.
And this was war.
Mm-hmm.
The restrictions, they would place their guns in small villages, but you couldn't bomb that village, so you just had to go in there, hit your target when they knew you were coming, have them shoot at you out of these villages, and hope you lived.
Mm-hmm.
That was wrong, I think. The whole thing was, the whole war plan was wrong. The whole way we went about it was wrong. And a lot of people paid a terrible price for that.
What would have been better? What could have been done differently?
I think if we were going to go to war, you go to war to win.
Mm-hmm.
We should have blown up their water supplies. We should have blown up their power plants. We should have blown up, you know, anywhere they put artillery.
Mm-hmm.
We should have blown it up. That's what you do in a war.
Mm-hmm.
We should have blown up their dams and flooded their land so that they couldn't operate. But we didn't do any of that. We weren't allowed to do any of that. It was like we were stalemating
mm-hmm.
the war, trying to hold on without really fighting the war.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just my opinion. I don't.
Well, that's what this is about. Tell me what you told your daughters about your husband's military experience, especially in Vietnam.
Well, I told them just what I told you. I think that it was a wrong war, that I think their father was right to go and do his duty. I mean, he was duty-bound. He swore an allegiance to do what was asked of him, and he did it. honorably, and they both believe that too.
Mm-hmm.
And they understand the difference between doing your duty and saying you won't do it because of this or that. Or they understand that the war probably wasn't, I won't say it wasn't justified, but it wasn't fought correctly.
Mm-hmm. Did your husband discuss the war with them?
No. He did not for a long time, no.
Okay.
They were children. They were small children.
Right.
It was hard enough for them to accept that a lot of their friends' fathers died. And, you know, just accepting that was hard enough for them. So, no, he didn't talk about it a lot at all, actually.
Did you talk to them about it? Or did you wait for him to kind of start opening up?
I waited. I talked to them later. I just told them that he was away. And as they grew older, they learned about war.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't tell them. We didn't dwell on it, no.
Okay.
But I told them to be proud of their father and of all their friends' fathers and all of the military men to be very proud.
Mm-hmm.
And they are to this day.
Okay. How much contact have you had with Vietnamese here in the United States?
Very little. Very little.
Is it by choice or just by
happenstance? No, it's just by happenstance. They live in their own communities, and like if there's a couple of tailors and
mm-hmm.
just when you run into them, and it's not, I don't hold any animosity towards them because I don't know what their personal history is, and actually they could have died, you know, for our military
mm-hmm.
to help us, and you don't know that.
Mm-hmm.
So you don't take that judgment with you.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. But the country itself now, I will not buy Vietnamese goods.
And I assume by that that you would not want to go visit.
I would never go.
Okay.
I would never go.
Okay. Even if, would you go to back to Ubon?
I never went there.
Right.
No, I wouldn't.
Okay.
I have no interest I'm going forward, not backward.
Okay. Tell me about the movies on Vietnam and books written on Vietnam. What is your opinion of the ones with which you've been familiar?
Well, most of the books I've read were written by people who went there,
mm-hmm.
with the exception of Dereliction of Duty.
Mm-hmm.
But I've tried to read the history books
mm-hmm.
about it. And also our friends who wrote books. And just from that. But I belong to just a very loose-knit military wives group.
Mm-hmm.
And we do talk about it. We talk about our experiences, the people who died that we, you know, really cared about.
Mm-hmm.
And we reminisce and talk about it a lot more than... My husband and I don't talk about it very much unless we're discussing a book or history or something like that.
I was going to ask you that. How much do you talk with him about it?
When he talks to his friends on, you know, through email,
mm-hmm.
we discuss it. We discuss it when we're reading books. But other than that, it's not, you know, it's not something that looms large in our lives.
Mm-hmm.
Other than the friends that we lost.
Mm-hmm. Is this a support group of military wives or just friends together?
Actually, it's really kind of funny. It was formed by this one woman who was a military wife, and she had moved to this community about 3 years. This has been about 15 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
She said, if I died tomorrow, I wouldn't know anybody to come to my funeral. So she wanted to form this group, and anybody who's been in the military knows that military people bond.
Mm-hmm.
So she put this little notice in the paper, and we started this little group, and we do it just to be social.
Mm-hmm.
We go to lunch. We don't do charity things in this group. We just are there in friendship, and we bond with one another. When we're sick, we help each other. Some of us have died, so it's just a community thing.
It sounds like the bond amongst military wives is similar to that amongst military men.
You know, I think it is probably as close as anything can be that's not identical.
Right.
We didn't get in the airplane and go do the job, but we were there and lived it through them, and I think still do. I think military families who continue to be families and love one another do this. It's a normal thing. As a matter of fact, when we lived in Portugal, a Portuguese general told us he had come over here in an exchange with his family, and he was on a military base, and he said people from the base came over and offered to help him move in his refrigerator, hang his drapes, and do things like that. And he said, you know, in my country, you would only ask your brother to help you do that. And he said, "For I understood immediately Americans bond together." And he has sent every one of his four children over on the exchange program to go to high school in the United States. And I thought, what a wonderful thing. Even he understood it was just military, but he still thought this was a wonderful way to look at things. And it made such an impression on him. So it made an impression on me, too, because I always took it for granted.
Right.
And he didn't, so I thought that was interesting.
Do you think the U.S. government has taken care of its Vietnam veterans?
No.
Why not?
Well, they subtract my husband's Social Security from his retirement, for one, which would give us a few hundred more dollars a month, which would make a big difference to us. I think that he doesn't get the... Although I think they're making great strides and doing a lot better, the VA is sorely lacking in the care it gives the veterans, although I think it's changing, and they are doing better.
Okay.
It concerns me.
Okay.
I think, and they told us always that we would have health care for life, and when we turned 65, they threw us under the Medicare program, which is not complete medical care for life. And I feel like we made a lot of sacrifices, and they should have kept their word, and they didn't.
Okay. What do you think are the myths or misperceptions that the American people, or in general, have about the American soldier in Vietnam?
I think one of the misconceptions is that they were just drugged out all the time on marijuana, because we heard a lot about that. I think they don't understand that the majority of them were just kids doing a terrible, dirty job. And I just think they have no comprehension of what it was like.
Who is they?
You said the American people.
Yeah, just in general, the American people?
In general, yes.
Okay. Okay. Have you ever been to the memorial in Washington?
Yes, I have.
What has been your experience there?
Well, I went and touched the names of those men in our squadron that we lost, and our one dear friend, and it was sad. It was like visiting a grave, and that was before they found his bones. And interestingly enough, he had two sons, and the one son went in the National Guard in Houston and flew some of the very same airplanes that his dad had flown. but it was sad to go there.
Mm-hmm.
It was somber. It was a beautiful wall, and I thought a very apt memorial.
Mm-hmm.
But I felt sad.
Did you go one time, or have you been more than
I've been more than one time.
Okay. Has it changed over the years for you?
No, because it's like visiting a grave.
Mm-hmm.
I still feel the same way every time I go there. I feel somber and sad. I feel more sad because a lot of good men lost their lives, which means they didn't get to live out their lives and see their children grow up, and the war, I think, was wrong.
Mm-hmm.
It was not really just, and I fight from saying that they lost their lives for nothing, because I don't really believe that, but I still think, what a waste.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what strikes me when I go there.
What have you witnessed other veteran spouses doing there? Have you been able to identify them or talk with any of them?
Oh, yeah. When you go there, you usually take flowers.
Mm-hmm.
And you always see people there crying and or just being very somber.
Mm-hmm.
But it's just like visiting a graveyard, I think.
Mm-hmm.
And we all want to do it because it's a memorial to our friends.
What advice would you give other military wives?
In what respect?
Well, of how to deal with the absences of their husbands, how to deal with the potential of death in war, how to deal with controversy at home during war.
I would say read all you can. Learn about the war, whichever war it is, whatever
mm-hmm.
war it is. I would say continue your education. Educate yourself. Think of the way that you would raise your children if your husband died.
Mm-hmm.
And I would support him in every way you can. Now it's a lot easier. They have email and all, you know, communication.
Mm-hmm.
I would say just strive to be as strong and independent as you can be
mm-hmm.
and still support them and love them, be it your wife or husband, whatever, but don't add to their burden by telling them your problems.
Right. Okay. And one other question, what role did the church play in your life as far as dealing with your husband's military service?
Well, my particular church was wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
As I said before, our priest had been a chaplain, and he was wonderful, and it was very influential, and I knew my children were safe in that school,
mm-hmm.
and I knew I had some place I could go and talk, and as a matter of fact, a member of our church was one of the first captured, and he was a FAC, and
mm-hmm.
He was captured, and after the war, we found out that they beheaded him. But while he was missing, we all just, the church, we did charity things for the church together, and we would talk together and try to just help each other go on.
Mm-hmm.
But our my church, that particular church, we're Episcopalians,
mm-hmm.
was very influential in helping us as a family. Later on, the Episcopal Church became so political, my husband left it.
Mm-hmm.
But this particular priest he loves, and also this particular church we loved.
Mm-hmm.
And I also go to church here, Episcopal Church, and I found them to be very loving and caring, and they're trying so hard to do it right this time.
Mm-hmm.
And our church, we parade the American flag, and then the Texas flag goes down our aisle every Sunday. And we, you know, we love our country, and we pray for all the men from our church who are in harm's way now,
mm-hmm.
and all others,
mm-hmm.
and try to support them by sending care packages to them. And I have found this church here to be very loving and supportive, too. We've already lost one young man out of our church in Afghanistan.
Mm.
So I think that while this church on the whole is more passive, they understand that you can't take that role. They mm-hmm. understand they made big mistakes in Vietnam
mm-hmm.
when they didn't support the men and families.
Mm-hmm.
And they're trying so hard not to repeat that, no matter how they feel
right.
about any war. And I respect them for that.
Okay. Well, Mrs. Hamilton, is there anything else that you'd like to talk about or add to our discussion today?
I don't know. I'll probably think of something the minute I hang up.
Well, if you do so, then you can add it to the interview and you get it in hand.
Okay. I hope I haven't rambled too much.
No, ma'am. You have not. Let me go ahead and officially sign off.
Okay.
This will officially end the oral history interview with Mrs. Frances Hamilton. Thank you very much, ma'am.
Thank you.